Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Race podcast for April 3rd. It's exciting.
It is.
Spring. Easter is just around the corner. It's not spring.
Spring is in the air.
In no way does it resemble spring.
We have green grass that shows, and the snow
like
is gone.
Brown grass.
No, this is, look, it's green.
Sort of green, but like brown. And it's gray. It's very, very gray, of course, because it's winter. And
it's not winter.
It won't be summer, or it won't be spring. Spring won't be about 1 week in the middle of May. And then it'll be hot summer until, or cold, really, through June.
I think you're just not looking. Look at the buds in the trees. There's buds there. And
I really can't see them.
This will be our first spring in this backyard, so we don't know.
We don't know what kinds of things
we probably have some nice trees.
Maybe.
That are going to bloom.
Probably not, though.
You're such a pessimist.
I'm going for the pessimism. So, today we thought we would talk about that fantastic idea that everybody on the internet loved and thought was awesome, the Billy Graham rule, which I can't exactly say what the rule is. I feel like I sort of know. As usual, I have a vague idea. It means never talking to a woman who's not your wife and having nothing to do with the evil seductress sex. But for men to keep
the other part of it is crushing women under your feet as they're trying to get ahead.
Right, both. Billy Graham was all about the patriarchy.
Right.
The crushing of women under the heel.
Right.
The booted foot of Christ. So, could you just briefly explain what the rule really is?
It was an idea that you, that was our son coming in to visit us. We're usually in our studio, which
but
is
today
our bed.
We've moved to the office.
Right.
I feel like that's so bad.
We're raising the bar and our professionalism here. And so.
Yeah. So what is the Billy Graham rule?
The Billy Graham rule is that you don't eat dinner with, you're not alone.
As such as one. I will not even eat with such a one.
You don't put yourself in a situation where you're alone with a woman to whom you're not married. I suppose you could be alone with your wife, but you can't. You can't be alone with another woman because...
Can you be alone with your wife? Or should you always have like
a chaperone?
Chaperone.
We have six chaperones who show up all the time. They're always with us. So we are safe, if that's the...
Yeah,
that's the Billy Graham rule. Preventing us from having seventh child.
That's probably what it should be.
Right. The anyway, yes, the idea that you don't want to be alone with a woman who's not your wife.
Okay, but that's...
And the argument... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
So the argument is... I keep
hearing
these...
You be pro, I'll be con.
Okay. Yeah, okay, we'll play it out that way. So... why don't you be con? Because, many of your friends are angry about this rule.
Don't glare at me.
I don't understand. I have no idea why anyone would be upset with this. I understand. Well, actually, I understand why secular feminists would be. But
no,
I can't understand why
a Christian
female would be upset that a man doesn't want to cheat on his wife.
So,
and wants his wife to feel secure in their marriage.
That's what the problem is.
What's the problem?
You have to engage in real life where women do exist.
Mm-hmm.
Women exist in the world and even in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you have to work with women.
So why not just invite?
Well, sometimes you can't. What if you work... So I have a friend who works in a lab and she has to do science
mm-hmm.
sometimes with men.
Mm-hmm.
Who are not her husband.
Right.
And there's not always like lots of other people in the lab. Sometimes she's there. And it might just be one other person.
Right.
So.
Okay, so she doesn't want to follow the rule. She doesn't have to follow the rule. It's not like a rule that, like, no one's saying, even though you follow it, that it's a biblical command that we don't have meetings. I don't follow the rule. I don't think it's necessary. I meet with women by myself all the time.
And I enjoy every minute of it.
There's no one's, Billy Graham didn't say every Christian man should do it, neither does Vice President Pence think that everybody should do it, but for him, in a position he's in. So I don't understand why the anger. No one's trying to make everyone do this. No one's saying that it must be done. But some people choose to do it, and it's
the people who choose to do it mm-hmm. are devaluing women and are sexualizing them, because they're indicating by their choice to follow this rule that they view all women as sexual objects and not as human people. And so they are both dehumanizing and over-sexualizing the woman. And so the very presence of the rule indicates the misogynistic inclination of their hearts to not value women as people.
So
what's your answer to that, sucker?
So do you think that it's ever occurred that a man and a woman being alone have... you know, without intending to, have found themselves in a compromising situation.
Are you talking about in the Christian world? Just in
a gym, yeah, in the Christian. Has that ever happened?
I am having a really hard time thinking of any time that, especially any Christian, has been unfaithful to his wife. I mean, that just doesn't happen. Especially pastors. Pastors are always faithful to their wives.
Right. And no women would ever want to seduce a pastor.
No.
No woman would ever be attracted. Not saying
that. Women are always the victims, and they never do anything
and
wrong.
Has never been attracted to her pastor. It would never want to.
You know who I used to be jealous of? Church? We would do morning prayer every morning with the ladies of the church.
They were in their 70s.
I know, but they thought you were hot. And they would say stuff to me in the sacristy. I would be like, you know, washing the chalices, and they would come up with their gray hair and their twinkly eyes and say, you know, I really hope you're not going to cut Matt's hair this week because he's starting to have some curl, and that is just, I just really like it like that. Please don't cut his hair. And I'd be like, step off, hey. Go to the grocery store and hit on the... No. So you were very cute. You still are. You're very cute.
It's just past tense.
You are very cute. But you're also in a position of authority in the church.
Yeah.
There's a power differential between you and most people, so you have to be very careful. It would be ridiculous of us not to pay attention to the issues between men and women, and that doesn't actually dehumanize women to think through these issues.
I don't think that
over-sexualize...
Anybody who follows the rule thinks that, oh, well, the reason I can't be alone with this person is because she's going to try and seduce me. Yeah, she's a vixen who's after me, and so...
after me. After your what?
No one thinks
your
that.
Awesome
but you have
musical
a,
ability.
But if you have a blanket rule like that, it actually makes it less personal. Like if you, so one thing I was reading was actually not just reading, you just said it, that rule sexualizes all women. And I think it does the opposite, because if you don't have that rule, then, which I don't, you've got to be more careful. And there will be certain people you weren't going to meet with because you know there's something there that you want to avoid. And so that pigeonholes certain people, you know. It's a little bit like we have a policy for funerals. We're going to have a policy for funerals that we don't allow eulogies. We just do the sermon. But if we only have that policy for certain families because we think that the people who might get up and preach the or speak the eulogy are wacko, then we're then we're insulting people. Then we're saying, okay, other people can have a funeral with eulogy, but you can't. And the same thing is true with the Billy Graham rule. If you only use it for certain women, you are saying, okay, well, that woman is is bad news. Or I'm attracted to that woman, so I can't be with her.
I mean, the problem
whereas if you have a rule, no one gets hurt. Say, hey, look, nothing, but I know you would never try to seduce me. I know there's nothing between us. Please don't get me wrong. This is just a blanket policy that I have in place for just because to protect my marriage and to protect you.
From my licentious gaze.
Well, no, I mean, how can a woman resist being alone with me?
With Mike Pence. Sorry. I'm sure his wife thinks he's awesome.
But Mike Pence has power, doesn't he? He's a vice president of the United States.
There's a power differential.
So that's an aphrodisiac for some women, isn't it? I mean, don't the women...
Okay, that's so offensive. An aphrodisiac for some women.
Why is that offensive?
Do you even know what women are like?
I know they're attracted to power and money. And
who are they?
I mean, some women are.
I know women are attracted to power and money. Uh-huh. Okay, see? That's the problem.
What's wrong with that? That's true. It's like if you said men are attracted to beauty. Yeah. Of course they are.
Well, that's not sexist. They should value all women equally. All of them. And
they do. And they pick the ones they think are most beautiful.
That's really... Well... You can't.
This is the thing. We don't want to acknowledge reality about men and women. And so,
well, that men and women are sexual creatures. Right. That's not allowed. We can't discuss that or acknowledge that it's true.
Right. And that doesn't mean every relationship is sexual. That doesn't say that. It doesn't say that every woman who's meeting with a man is trying to do something, or a man's trying to do something to her, or that he thinks he can't control himself, or anything. It's just if you have that blanket rule, everyone's safe, and there's no.
Well, everybody's
it takes
not safe.
Off the table.
A conversation about
the worry.
Yeah.
Any kind of worry. Ever.
Well. Okay, but that's the problem, is that you can still have this rule and you can decide to break your own rule.
Of course. Yeah.
And so the presence of the rule doesn't solve the problem if you're unthinking, if you're imprudent, if you expect the rule will save you, if you don't have virtue underlying your actual convictions.
Right.
The rule, I think it could be unkindly employed as well. You can use the rule as an excuse to be unkind to people.
Well, you could. You could.
So I don't think, like, you shouldn't make the rule and then be like, okay, I'm safe now. I never have to think again. You still have to think. You still have to make decisions. You should still pick up the person in the rain. If a woman is walking in the rain at night, you shouldn't drive by her and say, I never will drive anywhere with a woman that's not my wife.
I can't help you.
That's just unkind. That's just mean. That's stupid.
You can make her sit in the back seat.
Oh my gosh. I mean, you could use the rule as a kindness and employ it with kindness and occasionally break it when
it's necessary to break.
Unkind. Yeah.
Or a woman's really pretty.
Yeah, I think that's true. You should break it when... Okay, so what I kept saying is that the rule itself indicates the inclinations of the heart. Yeah. The person who makes the rule in the first place shows where their desires lie, and that's to be faithful to their wife.
Yeah, but some are saying it shows where their desires lie because it shows they're licentious, and they suspect women.
I would say that that's not true.
Okay.
You're wrong.
You're wrong.
Somebody on the internet is wrong. Okay, let's take the difference between Billy Graham and Bill Clinton. They both have the name Bill, so they're just alike. Billy Graham wanted to be faithful to his wife, and so he put a rule in that was an outward manifestation of the inclination of his heart. And he kept the rule because he desired to be faithful. His heart was already inclined towards his wife, and the rule was just an excuse to follow the natural inclination of his heart, or his will, and to guide his body and his mind towards what his will had decided. Bill Clinton, on the other hand, has the Jimmy Swaggart rule. That's from the Babylon Bee.
Babylon Bee.
Which is... If I have dinner with another woman, I make sure not tell my
wife. Never tell my wife.
Never done. And that rule indicates the inclinations of his heart, which yeah. were very clear. He did not desire to be faithful to his wife.
Right.
And nor was he. So.
Okay, but. So Karen Swallow Pryor, your good friend and wonderful writer, not good friend, but friend, writer. I really like her and I like what she writes.
I'm her fangirl. That's her what fangirl, you right? mean. That I'm her. If a fangirl that's, can that's, be like a good personal friend. I was trying to say that in a more friend,
sensitive way.
Then so. Yes, I am close personal friends with Karen Swallow
Pryor. I was trying to say that in a nice way.
I'm her fangirl. I think she's awesome. I think she's super cool.
Okay,
and
but she
I
wrote,
agree with her article in Vox. And you, like the jerk male that you are, had a quibble.
Well, she wrote the article saying that she should link it. And
yeah, I can link it.
She wrote an article saying that, well, you don't need rules if you're developing virtue, right? If you're developing virtue, then you apply the
she
virtue.
She didn't say you don't need any rules.
No, she said that there's no reason to have that rule if you developed it, though. So you should find that rule in particular. You develop this, if you've developed the virtue of prudence,
then
you don't need the Billy Graham rule. But I thought that she was creating a dichotomy that doesn't exist, like because as you said just a minute ago, and I think you're right. And so you do disagree with her, even though you would never say that.
No.
That the rule is actually the manifestation of the virtue, and
for some.
No, I mean look. Okay, so the struggling alcoholic, just getting all the alcohol out of his house, that's a rule he has to keep in order not to, because he's not prudent.
He's not prudent.
He's not able to stop himself.
But he does his will, he does desire,
yeah.
he does desire to incline himself towards sobriety,
right.
and
right.
so he creates a law for himself, and he inclines himself to keep his law.
Right. But he's not. It's not the same thing as Billy Graham not meeting. Billy Graham's not setting up this rules because he knows that he would make
he's
the moves on
definitely
everyone.
Definitely going to be sleeping with all the people.
So a rule can be something that you have to do because you haven't developed a habit of virtue, but it doesn't have to be, and it can be a manifestation of that virtue. So
the rule can be a manifestation
right,
of virtue.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Okay. So do you agree with me?
But
you
I
disagree
also
with, you
no,
disagree
no,
with
no,
Dr.
No,
Spall,
I so. Completely agree with Dr. Swallow Pryor, and I resent your trying to create an
Well, the other aspect of it is that she brought up, and this is what I hear Christian women online saying about it, is they're upset because they think it keeps the woman down and in her career. And I just don't understand that. I don't understand women who have that attitude, because to me it seems like, well, if you think getting ahead in your field of study or your profession is more... See, I made her whine.
Whining? That's the dog. You horrible, horrible misogynist.
Me getting ahead in my career is more important than your marriage.
Okay, but
me
what
Me getting
if,
ahead in my career is more
what
important
if you
than your...
Need, what if you're a single mother and you need to make money? You know, you can't... The economy is driven by... people working deals with each other, and if you're a female lawyer, if you're very smart and you know, and you're in a law firm and you recuse yourself from all the drinking events, or the men recuse themselves from including you in all the drinking events where they do backroom deals with each other, then you're not going to go ahead.
You can be there with other women.
But what if a deal is made one-on-one?
Are you drinking with that person one-on-one in a bar?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I just think you could get around it. I think you could say, you know what? I definitely am going to go to the bar with you guys or you. I'm going to be drinking water. And
yeah.
I'm going to make it clear to you that that's what I'm drinking. I'm
right.
not going to schmet. This is why I don't understand why...
I don't see why it can't be gotten around. That's the thing.
The idea that women have to engage in the sort of patron, you know, the backroom... boys club deal, they have to enter into that fully in order to participate in the workplace.
Yeah, I don't buy that.
I think it's a capitulation.
So now you're
to
switching back. So now you're switching.
No.
You're also agreeing with
if
me on
this.
This
is about
okay.
you trying to pin me down to be agree with you, then this whole conversation is moot. I'm free to take whatever position I feel like taking in each sentence.
Well, it sometimes changes within the sentence, so I'm just making sure.
That's fine. Okay, so the thing that I thought over the weekend is.
I just don't think the women getting ahead is all that important compared to marriages being.
Well, that just shows what a jerk you are.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, so this is not PC either, but I didn't grow up here. In the place that I grew up, men and women inhabited very different spheres, and so men and women sat on opposite sides of the church. Women had sort of had female space to be in.
Where'd you grow up? Because you just said where, but it sounds like you grew up in, you know, Amish country, so where did you...
Oh, I grew up in Mali, West Africa, which is 99.99999% Muslim, mm-hmm. but also animist and traditional African culture. And so the women just, they have a different... Men live together. You live with your wife, but men have relationships with men, women have relationships with women. It's very rare, it was very rare for a man to be friends with his wife. And I think that's not, in the gospel, you would want to be, in Christian society, you would want to be friends with your wife. But it was so extraordinary for a man to be friends with his wife, if there was a special word for it, or to love her in a friendly way. That was unusual. So,
and wasn't that, that's kind of the norm, I think, for male-female relationships in historically. Historically, the marriage isn't for love, marriage is for procreation of children. And the
it's for, stop it, don't bark, stop, doggy. That's our very brave poodle.
Ashy.
Don't bark. I was saying something really interesting before the dog interrupted me.
We were talking about female
marriage. Okay, so it's really interesting to me. Of course, that definitely and completely limits you when women inhabit one sphere and men inhabit another.
And men are in charge.
And, well...
When that happens, men are the ones who make the society move...
Women are powerful in their sphere, and men are powerful in their spheres, and they sometimes, I don't think that a Malian woman is powerless at all. The whole idea of patriarchy is really weird. I think it's a Western social construct that's mashed over every other single culture in the world that, that people aren't thinking that way in those categories at all. So it's interesting to me coming here that women would value so highly the male spaces of power and think that unless they inhabit those completely and are on completely equal footing, that they are therefore powerless completely in their... I think that...
Which has never been true any time in history at all.
I think something essential about femaleness is given away when you adopt that category and make that your highest priority. Yeah. And then unless you have had that, you have lost.
Yeah.
You are not a full human. You're not a full person. And I think that's been adopted unquestioningly by lots and lots of women. And I think that means that when a woman has to inhabit a more female sphere, say she wants to stay at home with her child, which by law she should not be allowed to do. Ooh, I linked that article last week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Some nutcase in Australia thinks that it should be against the law for women to stay home with their children when they're school-aged. Or stay home and keep the home. She should be forced out into the workplace.
Well, that accomplishes two things. Both, you force the woman into the workplace and you get productive society that way. And the state then
has
control over the children. Right.
Okay. I lost my train of thought. I was ranting about this thing in Australia. Okay, so, but I think the power that a woman garners to herself in the female sphere of the home and even the church. Let's not throw over the church. Our little girls
close
are
the door.
Fighting all the time.
Hey, girls, what did I tell you about fighting? What did I tell you about it?
I was trying to tell Mel something. Listening.
Okay, well, that's not an excuse to scream and yell. Okay, if she's not gonna listen to you, then just don't talk to her. Ignore her. Okay. All right.
You mansplaining your daughter. Oh my word! Our son was totally mansplaining our daughter the other day about the computer. It's so awful. She started shrieking like a banshee. I was like, I don't want, why are you screaming? And it was because he was going down at the end of every sentence and like goading her and telling her things she already knew. It was really funny. I loved it. What was I saying? Who even knows what I was
talking about? You were talking about Australia, the Australian law.
Oh, okay. So when you chuck over the idea that okay, and I know this makes me now agreeing with Sharia law, which is that's a little joke. I don't think women should be veiled and have to live in inside and never leave the house. And never have any agency and never run a business and never do, you know, never speak and never be seen because of women's spaces. But I'm not saying that. I think women should, of course, be free to move about in society and speak to men. And men should be able to speak to women. And you should be able to go to the store and run a business and be president, whatever, be president. But we've chucked out the baby with the bathwater, which is that when women have relationships with each other and have power centered in the home and in the church, their own particular kind of power, you have something really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not one-to-one correlated with men's power in men's spaces. But so I don't buy the idea that equality means that women have to go into those completely male spaces and win there. Argument
you're reading
for
the
why
Iliad with the kids. I mean, who has the most power in the Iliad? I mean, who causes the action? It's not Paris. It's
Briseis.
No, it's the woman who he steals.
Helen. No, but Achilles is really angry because of Briseis.
And she gets him to steal her. It's not like a kidnapping episode. She's manipulated him into taking her. And that starts the war.
Okay, that's not fair though, because all the women have to stand around on the wall while the men kill each other and
right,
they're
but that's power. What I'm saying is that's the power you're talking about. That woman had power.
There is power.
And she exercised it. And and the world moved. That's the kind of power women have if they misuse it or use it. I mean, I think she misused it, but women have the power.
Oh, okay, so it's her fault.
You really can emit an effect to the way men think about things, what men decide to do, how men decide to live. Why on earth? I thought it was a horrible thing when it happened, but how did the temperance movement actually succeed in banning alcohol?
That's true.
Men agreed
for a short time
and went along
and
with
went
it
underground because
right to go underground, but that was a woman's thing. That's power. That is power.
That's bad power.
Right, I would agree. It was a bad rule, but that how does that happen? It happens when women manipulate. Or not. I'm sorry. When they use their feminine power to.
We can't even speak about this without being completely offensive.
Yeah.
But the total breakdown is that the conversation can't even really be had without shrieks of that's not fair or that's not okay or you're sexualizing me or you know I'm the victim, you know. I don't think that a man who says to the wide world, I don't want to have dinner with women even for work without my wife there.
Right.
Is sexualizing all those women.
No.
I think he's probably saying, I really hate business deals, and I'd rather go home and have dinner with my wife, but I have to go out to this stupid event, and I'm going to insist that my wife, who probably doesn't want to go with me and dress up, and then we'll, you know...
I mean, I'm not sure that's why everyone's doing it, but that would be a good reason to have.
Well, I mean, that's why... if I was going to make such a rule, it would be to give myself permission to do the thing that I already wanted to do, which is not have to go out and talk to any other human being.
And have your wife. I would like to have you with me in most every case, not because I'm worried about being seduced, but because I like being around you.
Are you trying to salvage all the insulting things that you've said about women now by being, like, super nice?
I didn't say anything.
It's too little too late, man. No, I think it's a really difficult topic. I think the gendered relationships in the West are so broken. Men and women don't know how to be together. They don't know how to be. Mm-hmm. Most people are playing a part anyway. Most women and men, not most. It's way too general.
You're painting with a broad brush.
I'm putting. So, but the, how often have we spent time with people who felt like, say, they wanted to do Ephesians 5. Mm-hmm. They wanted to live out submission and love and marriage. And so they put on a garment, essentially, of a cultural 1950s picture of what that looked like.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, it fit very ill. And
they so that means they the wife can never make any decision. And the husband's always right. And that's how several couples we've met with have played that out. Like, she's never right about anything.
She can't criticize him.
And right. So he expresses an opinion, and she, I guess, adores the opinion. I'm not sure what
even
that means.
When it's...
Right, and that's not what submission and headship is about at all in the scriptures. But that's the way our culture. I guess that's what's produced when you have feminism on the one hand, you get the reaction to it.
And
on the other, which is equally weird. Right. So we're agreed.
Well,
then.
Just don't be a weirdo. That was my other post this week.
Right.
Try not to be weird as a Christian. That should have been in the Beatitudes.
Blessed are the
non-weirdo.
What is it? What do you mean by the weirdo? What do you mean by the weirdo? I don't understand this whole thing.
Okay, well, I said I was going to find that clip and I didn't find it, but I do think that the Christians can be very weird. There's a lot of confusion, biblical confusion, that produces weird personality issues. So if you have a very legalistic, say, Billy Graham rule that boxes you in so that you can't actually make human decisions and talk to people as if they're really human, you just, it's something that's profoundly off. And I think often you can't put your finger on why that person is acting so strangely. It's because they've adopted some sort of biblical rule for themselves. I'm trying to think of an example. The only thing that comes to mind is that hideous, not weird, but that the vision forum thing. The quiverful movement. That's just weird. Like, the vision forum took sort of, they thought they were being biblical, right? They thought they had biblical womanhood, biblical manhood, and they had all these books and cool toys, frankly. But meanwhile, the guy is committing adultery on his wife, who's born something like 20 children, all lined up in khaki trousers.
I don't know that necessarily means that vision form produced that weirdness.
There's something, though, about the way their vision of what they were defining biblical womanhood, biblical manhood, and the way that they talked about it, that was just, maybe all the words were right, but something was off. I feel like there's tons of that in evangelicalism.
Weirdness.
Just, so you can't put your finger on...
Shellacking an idea over reality that's not really consistent with that reality.
With reality.
So the in this case, the idea of a man being the head of the household means he's always right. He's not just the head, he's the Greek
the
city
god.
right,
he's
exactly.
Hercules.
Right. He's the tyrant in a Greek city. He exercises absolute autonomy, autocratic control over everything, and
he can have whatever woman he wants in that scenario, right. Even if it's
that wasn't part of the vision forum thing. That's what happened, right? He was just being like Abraham. He was exercising patriarchy.
Yeah, he was. That's patriarchy. Uh-huh.
Biblical values. So the family values. The weird. That's, I think you are hitting on something that happens. You see it in a lot of more fundamentalist realms. So, I'm never going to go to a rated R movie. I'm never going to and look in and not just making that your rule, but looking at people who do go to rated R movies as if they're sinners or lost in some kind of depravity.
And so what you do then in that case is you lose the ability to think about art.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You can't engage with reality and with culture because right. you've said that going to this kind of movie is a sin.
Yeah.
Whether or not it actually is. Yeah. And you haven't thought through anything.
Right.
The other, so there's that sort of fundamentalist end, but there's also this, there's weirdness brought in when you find that you need Jesus to speak to you in your heart.
Mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
you end up with Jesus saying all kinds of weird things, and other people looking in can't quite put their finger on where what you're saying is sort of strange. It's not anti-biblical, but it's made you into, as Beth Moore would say, a weirdo. Mm-hmm. You're like, you're kind of contorted, listening for the voice of God here and there, twitching back and forth between impressions.
Well, and then in conversation, you'll say things. Well, and God told me yesterday in prayer this, or God laid this on my heart.
But
or
then,
God,
when
and
you
then
say,
if you're talking about like that to another person, they're thinking, "What?"
Especially when God told you something like, "You know, I could find mayonnaise at a better store,
yeah.
cheaper, right. or something." Right. I don't know.
Right.
You think, well, why would Jesus tell you that? You know. It's like all of evangelicalism is Joan of Arc, you know?
Without the
like,
cool armor.
Why would yeah. God tell
well,
you
some of them
to
do have cool
that?
Armor, but, yeah.
The cool armor? I've just offended all the Catholics.
Okay. Well, we should...
And the charismatics. And the feminists.
So, I think you should develop
and
this
the
weird...
fundamentalists.
I think you should develop this weirdo idea more.
Okay, so but the reason that I have to, one more thing
okay.
before we talk about something else more interesting is that I was reading about, I haven't read the Benedict Option. I've only been reading about the Benedict Option because I don't actually have a copy of the book. You were going to lend it to me. So I'm reading about the Benedict Option uh-huh. and there's this review in the Federalist about how the Benedict Option doesn't work. And as I'm reading the article, I'm thinking, as the person explains how it doesn't work, using their own life as an example of how it doesn't work. The reason that it doesn't work, honestly, is because these people were weird. Like, they created a weird community that they thought was biblical. They were grinding their own flour and, like, you know, eschewing the darkness of the evil world outside. And it wasn't, you, probably any sane person who was really thinking things through would have looked in and said, that's weird. You guys are just being weird and you're calling it Jesus. And like,
right.
you shouldn't blame God.
Or the Benedict Option.
Or the Benedict Option for the weird community that you just put together. Like, that's
well,
not
there was,
fair.
Okay, so right, what Roger Ayres does say, you know, you can't drop out, develop habits of life and mind that are ancient and traditional and old, so that you don't, you know, the traditional Christian way of living in the United States is you do everything that everyone else does, you just slap Jesus over it. So you take part in all of the political discussion, you take part in all of the, I mean, everything, just you just insert Jesus into your life. And Rod Dreher is saying our society has become so corrupt and so far away from virtue that that's no longer really possible. And so we need to kind of recreate culture in our families and in our communities.
That's great, unless the culture that you create is just a little bit off.
Right. No, I agree.
Like, and how do you do that if you have a church that's so in love with heresy? This is the reason why I might think it might be too late for the Benedict Option. Because who is going to make up these communities? Joel Osteen's church, like, you know...
Well, he wouldn't be reading the Benedict
Option. He wouldn't be reading the book. Right?
No, it's the people who
it's
take it
like
are...
It's for, like, the three people who aren't weird. As Christians,
the people who tend, he's writing for Orthodox, Catholic, Roman Catholics, and Orthodox people, and Orthodox Protestants. He himself is Eastern Orthodox, and so he's trying to figure out how to fix the society. And so the way to do that is, remember we read that book, How the Irish Saved Civilization.
Yeah.
And they, the monastics, became the storage house for the lost learning of ancient Rome, and they preserved it so that when civilization reemerged, there was this.
There would be something there.
Right.
People could read.
So that's kind of his idea for us and for culture. And that doesn't mean grinding your own grain necessarily, but it does mean looking at society as something that's been lost, and looking at your family as a unit to preserve, and as your church as a unit to preserve what has been lost. I think the biggest criticism of his book so far, which I agree with, is that being an Orthodox person, I don't think he understands that culture isn't preserved by Christians huddling up. The gospel is the only thing that can help the culture.
Yeah.
And the gospel kind of is sublimated in that book, because he can't talk about it, because that separates Orthodox Roman Catholics and evangelicals.
So it is like the external trappings of culture that sort of take the place of going into all the world with the gospel.
Right.
I mean, because I thinking about our own church, we have to be out. I mean, we'd like people from the outside world to come into the church building.
I mean, if someone comes into our church and, you know, all the women greet that person with, you know, bonnets on and homespun dresses, they're going to run screaming out of the house. Out of the church.
Well.
Although I did think it was really nice that one Sunday you all wore hats.
We did all wear hats when you preached on the hat passage. Actually, somebody...
1 Corinthians 11.
Pinned a Kleenex to the top of her head because she didn't have a hat, which I thought was fantastic. And it was an act. The problem is it was an act of rebellion, because you didn't want us to wear hats because it made you freak out. It was going to make you freak out in the pulpit. So we did it all anyway out of submission and respect to our pastor. All the ladies showed up rebelliously in hats, which I thought was so great. Yeah. Well, I think we've beat that into the ground.
Yes.
Do you like to talk about Easter food?
Yeah, we're going to have for Easter. We're transitioning to a segment on cooking. We should sound somewhat professional here.
I don't know how we can do that with the door banging and like the people walking in and out and the dog and the children.
So what are we having for Easter?
I don't know.
A leg of lamb. We always have a leg of lamb. I thought last year's leg of lamb was the best, slow roasted.
That was really good.
I actually marinated it for a day before. Sorry.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did. So I'm thinking about brining a lamb. I'm not sure if you can do that with lamb. But
do you need to?
I don't know if you do or not.
I don't think you need to.
It's really nice meat, but remember I brined that really nice cut of beef that we got?
Yeah.
That you shouldn't have to do anything to. It's really nice, but it tasted
That was very, very
gorgeous.
Delicious.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about brining. We need to get mint.
Why are you pointing at me? You expect me to go out and harvest the mint in the garden, the dead winter garden where there's no mint in the garden.
And we can make hot cross buns this year with.
Oh yeah.
With einkorn.
Do you realize that those are full of dried fruit?
Are they really?
Yeah. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
It's like they're supposed. It's like bread fruitcake. Cross.
Oh, it looks so good.
Yeah, we should
try it. I've seen you make them before. You never put...
I make them without a dried fruit.
Oh.
Which means that they're not...
Not hot cross
And
buns.
Then I put a cross in them, but they're not
actually
crossed.
So there's buns with a cross on top of it. Okay.
Which is not the same.
Okay.
I could make those, though.
Well, could you put something inside of it, like jelly or...
Ooh, yeah.
Or...
I think you should make donuts.
I would love to make donuts.
I'm hoping to devote myself to lemon curd this Easter.
Your lemon curd is some of the best.
Yeah. I think that all the desserts should be a lemon variety.
Right.
Except for maybe some chocolate.
Right. So we have some very nice wine that we were given for our housewarming.
Yes. We've been saving it.
That we're saving for Easter. We can
I don't feel like we should be saying any of this aloud, though, in case people come over.
Right. No one's invited. If you're looking for a place to eat Easter dinner and you don't have one... I heard that other people in our church might have room.
I can provide you with a list of names.
So.
Just kidding, of course. We're very open.
We're open and affirming.
Right.
There are children waving outside the door.
Yeah, we were going to have a much more involved conversation about this, but we
can't. But we'll bring it up next week, probably during Holy Week. Yes. We'll do a special, extra special, super special Holy Week podcast next week for all of your Holy Week and Easter needs.
That will be, you'll all enjoy that so much.
Yes. So thank you so much for listening.